I'm impressed with you guys' electronics.
We were just admiring your smart board.
We're remodeling.
You stick around long enough, you'll see the true impact of
technology. But I'm sure.
I just spent 20 minutes impressing.
Yeah, this, I'm impressed. So impressed.
Okay, are we ready? Are we broadcasting? Okay, we're on. Good afternoon. It is Wednesday, June 8th, 2011. It's the North Dakota Public Service Commission. We're in the North Dakota Public Service Commission hearing room on the 12th floor of the state capitol in Bismarck. For anyone who may be listening in, this is Commission Chairman Tony Clark. I'm joined today by my fellow commissioners, Brian Kalk and Kevin Kramer, and I'll allow them to introduce themselves.
That's Kevin. Kevin Kramer, just good afternoon, and welcome, and thanks, Tad, for coming on quick notice.
Appreciate
that. And Commissioner Kalk.
Just Brian Kalk, same thing. Thanks for coming on short notice. I have some questions, and I think this will be a positive session. Thanks.
Good.
Okay. With that, the informal today is scheduled to talk about, make sure I have the right case number. Strange things were docketed in this, in that file.
09750.
Okay. 097, yeah, sorry, PU 09750 Bridger Pipeline. And we're here today to talk about some correspondence that the commission received related to construction activities on the Bridger Pipeline. And specifically, there were some photographs that I think caused staff and speaking for myself, not my fellow commissioners, but they may, too, have been concerned about the pictures that were in there, and we wanted to get Representative Sombridger here to talk about the construction season, what the status of things are, and just to get more information for our own benefit since we've been have received the correspondence. So with that, we do have some representatives from Bridger here, and we'll allow them to introduce themselves. Before we do that, why don't we have others who are in the in the audience identify themselves, including commission staff.
I'm Kelsey Kropp, the legal intern for the summer.
I'm Patrick Fawn with the Public Service Commission staff.
Justin Kringstead, the North Dakota Pipeline Authority.
And representing Bridger.
Tad True, Vice President Bridger and Belfus Pipeline.
Bob Stamp, Engineering, Bridger Pipeline.
With that, why don't we, I don't know, it's, Kevin, it's in your portfolio. I don't know if you have any.
Well, I don't. I think you've set it up perfectly, Tony, actually. I saw the pictures, was concerned at least, alarmed maybe even, how dramatic the pictures are, and given a little bit of the history of the construction of this pipeline, the problems there have been, we felt like we better get a handle on it pretty quickly. I might add that there's another case that's related to this, and that, of course, is the siting of the DGC CO2 line, which is also in our portfolio and under our jurisdiction. And so any reroutes or anything changes to that also falls under the jurisdiction of the PSC. So with that, I would just welcome presentation at this point and availability of folks for questions.
Okay.
Sure.
Dad, do you want to take it over from here?
Well, I'll try. Pat and I talked on, I think it was Monday, and I agreed to come in here. So everything you see is somewhat half ready, if you will. I try to throw some things together. Pat did share with me some photos of our right of way. And specifically near the Little Missouri Valley, and I put together some, not knowing the origin of the photos and where they came from, what geographic location they came from. I thought it would be good to put some things together that at least describe the area. I don't think I have all of the photos, but I think I can speak generally to the overall status of the construction of the pipeline. And if you allow me to go up and
sure.
Okay. Geographically speaking, obviously this is North Dakota. The orange line there represents the Four Bears pipeline. And so what I want to do is just generally talk about what areas that I'm going to be referencing. Just for general reference, spread 1 and 2.
I want to bring a microphone up with you just okay. so. Oh, here, Scott's got one.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Generally speaking, spreads 1 and 2 cover the south half of the pipeline. I'm sorry, I think I got it swapped. Spreads 1 and 2 cover the north half. 2 is in the middle. That goes through the Little Missouri Valley. Spreads 3 and 4 cover the south half. And for the most part, I think from the pictures that I saw, we're going to be specifically talking about spread 2, where it goes through the Little Missouri Valley. So to if you guys are familiar with this area, you can see there's Highway 22. The blue outline is what's referred to as the Buffalo Ranch. It's owned by the Fort Peck Tribe, or the tribes of the Fort Peck. And
or Fort Berthold?
I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong state, yes. and it looked like the pictures that I received from Patrick were generally from around this area, from the south side of the river and some potentially from the north side of the river. But that's my best guess as to where those pictures, that's my best guess as to where those pictures came from. So, but this is the general area that we're talking about. And what I'd like to do is, first of all, a lot of this, I think you guys probably receive this on a weekly basis.
Yep.
And really to skip to the end and skip to the punchline here is we're not done yet. As you can see from the status, the cleanup is, last week the cleanup was 0%, and the cleanup is now on spread 1, 10%, and spread 3 and 4, 10%. So everything I'm speaking to and all the pictures you see basically are net of our finishing or the cleanup and the right-of-way reclamation, which is going to continue throughout the rest of the year. I also thought I'd put together a presentation of the status of our pipeline, and I'll go through this fairly quickly so you guys can get to some questions. And the hope is that this hopefully answers some questions and may spur some other questions. We started right-of-way clearing and stripping, I believe, in October. As you can see from the blue skies, I think that's the last time we saw them up here.
Yeah.
We did run. This is the picture of the Little Missouri Valley going into some of the rough country. And again, this is as you can imagine, the terrain we encountered was very, very, very challenging. This is the right of way that's prepped for stringing of the pipe. This is actually a picture of us stringing pipe, and if you can see, just to give you an idea of how the precautions we were taking, we actually wouldn't let the truckers, and I don't think the truckers actually wanted to drive down into these valleys with a load full of pipe. So we actually hooked a bulldozer to the back of them and slowly lowered them down. Anyway, the trenching, and if you remember from the status report, we're 100% complete with the trenching. We've 100% lowered all of our pipe in. And then I think what we probably want to talk about most is the reclamation and the cleanup process. This is just a picture of some of the some of the reclamation that we've done. And what you can see here is the ground has been covered back with topsoil. What it still requires is some tilling. And so, and I've tried to be clear here that this is the first phase, is that this is not a complete right-of-way cleanup yet. And this is actually getting closer, if you can see that. So I also wanted, those were all the good pictures. And so I also wanted to get into some of the challenges that we faced throughout the winter. As you can see, there's been, as you know probably better than I do, there's been a tremendous amount of precipitation this year, and it's caused a lot of hill sloughing. And this is just a hillside actually near the Four Bears area. Another hillside near the Four Bears area. And this is a different one as well. And this is the one that has caused us obviously some concern, and I think you guys have been made aware of it by Dakota Gasification Company. And this is a picture of where the hill slough came in. And just for your reference sake, we've identified, you know, our pipeline on the left outer edge of that. That's the DGC line. I believe it's a 14-inch, but I'm not quite sure. You can see where the new slide happened, or the hill sloughed, and then you can see where the original cut was. And you can identify, you can say it's original simply because you can see the vegetation appearing right below it.
Ted, if I could just jump in.
Sure.
I guess the basic question I had from the first time I became aware of this is, when did you become aware of this? And then the time lag from when you becoming aware of this to us becoming aware of this, because for me, the got me right away concerned was that my first hear was not from you guys. I mean, that's right to my punchline right there.
Not only that, but the first time the DGC heard of it was upon their own discovery.
Right. And I actually, go ahead.
That's where we heard of it, too. Their pilot found it. So we got the call from them.
Well, and that's...
When was it?
Was it 3 weeks ago? 2 weeks ago?
2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago on a Thursday.
Well, and I guess that's kind of the way I'm looking at this, maybe it's overly simplified, but Mother Nature, things happen. But then when accidents happen, how quickly that somebody's aware of it to get the information so then decisions can be made, that 2 weeks is a pretty significant time lag. And... Well,
we were on a conference call with DGC the following day.
And then should have called us at the same time.
Okay. And from our standpoint, keep in mind that this line's not filled.
Yeah, it's empty.
So it's, I mean, there's...
But you are here today, so it shows the importance of the issue. Understand. Once you became aware that we were understanding it.
Okay.
So with that, I'll just listen some more. But
understood. Okay, so that's... That's certainly one issue that we've been dealing with. This is just another picture of it. And this is, again, another picture of the same area. Some of the pictures that I was... This is a picture that Patrick had sent to me. This is a right-of-way wash where it looks as though the rain that came in... washed out some of the backfill, and just simply call that just a wash.
Can I ask a question at this point, Ted? Mm-hmm. Speaking of backfill, I mean, at what point do you compact? You know, the soil? I mean, is that because I know reclamation or what cleanup is 0% after everything else is 100%. Is that normal, or is there some of that that's being done?
I mean, generally, the contractor will compact. As he backfills, he'll wheel compact it. In our case, it was probably frozen last winter, and the effective compaction at that time is...
It's an important distinction because I think as we consider winter, you know, we've been citing more pipelines that have been done, you know, built in the winter, and I think that's something we need to think about.
Well, what I've taken even a step farther is that I mean, I remember the hearing vividly because we haven't done a lot of hearings in Kildare, and this was a question that one of us asked about the construction during the winter. Would that be any problems that we'd anticipate in the spring? And I think the follow-on was that no, this kind of stuff won't happen. So, I mean, it gets right back to the heart of the matter.
Okay, and I don't want to say there's anything normal about this winter, because it's clearly one of the worst winters that I've ever experienced, and followed on by the massive amount of rainfall that you guys have or that we've received in North Dakota.
Shouldn't that cause you to look at the pipeline more often though?
During the construction phase?
During all phases.
Well, we do have. I mean, it's certainly. I mean, we have men on the ground during the construction phase throughout the.
I guess you go to during the construction phase, you get done, but then as the season progresses, if you will, an area that's done, isn't it just routine for someone to see that more often than just, I don't know what the protocol would be if it's once a week, but if it's been a very rough winter and you know that there's potential for things happening in the spring, having more eyes on these things so when they happen immediately, you're aware of them.
I don't know. I mean,
hindsight's always perfect, too. I know.
Yeah, and much of this area, and the reason it slipped was that
it's hard to get in.
You can't get in there. And, for the first week after it was discovered, the only way in was on a
Ranger.
A Ranger, a four-wheel ATV. It's not something you can access without great effort. So.
Right. And this is actually, I would say, let me get to the next slide. And as far as the ditch washing out like that, I'm not going to say that's common. It's not, I guess, given the amount of rainfall, it shouldn't be unexpected. But part of the cleanup process that we'll go through over the summertime is coming back and actually filling this back in. This is a picture that was sent to us that I think it's just the settling in the right of way, and this is basically where it appears. I did not take the picture, but this is a lot more common, and this is something that we'll have to come back in, year after year. To make sure that it continues to get compacted as the life of the pipeline goes on. Generally speaking, we don't start our aerial patrols until we actually fill it with crude oil, and there's an actual possibility of release. This has been, pipeline that we've been it's been a pretty challenging last 9 months, but we've built pipelines in the winter. That's kind of what we've been doing for the last 30 plus years in North Dakota. So now, as far as my key points, the biggest thing is we're not done yet. This is not how we leave pipelines at all. The cleanup process will be ongoing, and in fact, we probably won't be able to finish the reclamation. I mean, best case scenario, we'll be able to finish the reclamation by the end of the summer, but most likely we'll continue through as we find where the right of way might have settled. And
we generally follow reclamation through a full growing season and into the next one, right. So.
So those are my key takeaways that I wanted to present to you. I know that we've had an unusually hard winter, but this is it's to a certain extent not completely unexpected, but it's something that we will get taken care of.
Well, I think there's a couple of things that's come to mind, Tad. One is, and certainly Pat, you probably should get up here now so you can engage in this as well, but the proximity to the DGC line, which was a point of a lot of discussion, and I realize that by design, it's in the same corridor in some places, and
we
appreciate that. I mean, we appreciate that kind of efficiency. And it's hard to tell from pictures that somebody else provides just how close, but there are some situations where it looks awfully close to me, just as a casual observer. The other thing, though, I'd say, I think, early on is what heightens this even more than probably the usual, the photos that show the consequences of a severe winter and this type of construction in sensitive areas, is that it's not the first problem with the construction of the line. And so my question to you would be, are you satisfied that the contractor doing this work is doing all that they can do? Because they've been pretty reckless to this point, it appears to me.
I would not put the blame on the contractors. We've had two major issues, and I certainly would not put the blame on the contractors. You know, we've worked with, a lot of other pipelines, you know, throughout this process. But, you know, my understanding of the incidents last fall were, you know, we're still completing our safety report, but from the initial outset, I would not put the blame on the contractors. How about?
Well, first off, Kevin kind of pointed out a little about your pipeline, but the whole pipeline industry now, not just in North Dakota, but in the country, is coming under heavy scrutiny because of things that have happened. So I think that kind of plays out a little bit in the mm-hmm. setting right here. But how concerned are you about, it's been such a wet cycle, if you will, that, you know, you put the pipeline in on the bedrock, but, you know, the part that's undisturbed, that you packed it all around, how much could be underneath the pipeline that has already been washed away that then has changed the integrity of what you thought you've done as you did construction, if that makes sense.
You want to?
I don't think in any area that the pipe's been undercut.
Okay, that's the
to the extent
for.
That there would be concerns. I think any time you're backfilling a pipeline, whether it's new construction or remediation, the fill material is soft. You don't put rocks in. And so I think contractors can take care of filling that situation without impacting the pipe at all.
Because there was part of that pipeline, if I remember right, was the double wall going underneath the river. I mean, how far out does that extend? And there was a lot of discussion about that. And as the hill slopes down, some of that area just seems like it'd be natural for some good undercutting you come out of the grade into the flatland. I mean, unless you're way deep up top, which I don't think you would be that deep, there's going to be a natural area that's going to get washed
out. I think, you know, Tad talked about the fact that we've barely started our finishing. And, normally the contractor would be able to go back to the right-of-way immediately after backfilling and start finishing, putting in water bars to control water movement and erosion, which he did not get a chance to do. The contractors, just simply because of the amount of rainfall, have not been able to go do what they need to do to finish their jobs. And so what, you know, looks like problems is it was never anybody's oversight. It's just a matter of timing that they finished an area and then couldn't get it back in because of the mud and the rain to finish their job.
Speaking of mud and rain, there was a picture of a bulldozer that was stuck
mm-hmm.
somewhere. Are you familiar with that situation?
No, I saw that, and I don't know if that's our bulldozer or somebody else's or one of our contractors, but I will tell you that in other areas we have gotten bulldozers stuck, but not, assuming it's in that area, I don't know about it.
We're not sure whether that's our contractor or somebody else's.
It's a pretty dramatic picture.
It is. One of the things that causes me some pause is that there is a condition of the certification that Bridger signed that says, Bridger understands and agrees that reclamation and cleanup along the right-of-way must be continuous and coordinated with construction. Are we in a situation here? What I'm hearing from you is that, well, the construction's happened, and don't worry, we'll get back to it after it's all done. to me, that condition sounds more like, no, it's an ongoing process that is a part of the construction process itself, and the cleanup isn't this sort of separate thing that you go back in after there's a mess and take care of.
No, each of our contractors has in their scope of work the reclamation. So that's not something we contract separately. It's part of their responsibility on their spreads.
And I think it's sometimes hard to define, like, you know, put everything into a good bucket. I mean, what is cleanup? When we talk about right-of-way reclamation, you know, clearly, you know, when we see, you know, have visible pipe, you know, coming out of the ditch, we have to go back and backfill that. Whether it's a wash or, you know, or something else, that's continuous. In fact, generally speaking, and Bob, you can verify this if you want, but we demand that our contractors not leave any open ditch overnight. And so, to the extent that you know, there's a ditch open, you know, with the pipes in the ground, you know, that day, you know, generally speaking, that day, that should be backfilled. And in my mind, that's one of the reasons. And the primary reason for that, is a couple of things. Is one is that if you get snowfall, you know, overnight, then the ditch will fill up, and then you have to go back in and clean the whole ditch out. The second thing is just a danger to wildlife and to stock. Yeah. So that's the reason we do that. So general practice is actually to complete the backfill the same day that the pipe is laid into the ditch.
The DGC line that's hanging there. From an engineering standpoint, what is the risk to that particular line and the stress that may be placed on a pipeline hanging, or yours for that matter, even though it's not filled?
The risk is the stresses that is put on the pipe, in DGC's case, both from internal pressure, their operating pressure, plus the stress of hanging would exceed the strength of the pipe and yield. It'd either bend or burst. Ours, we don't have pressure, so our only stress is hanging. So there is risk, and that's actually a PHMSA-regulated calculation or determination as to how you handle that and how you evaluate it.
How far the span is that's open.
Correct.
And what the operating pressure
right.
are.
Right.
What are you aware? DGC, are they back online? They were suspended for a while, I think, because of it. Is that right? Or
I
don't think they are. I think they were planning on blowing it down this week to initiate a repair.
Pat, do you know? And we just had a letter placed.
We just received a filing by DGC. Are planning to route that pipeline differently. They're planning to route it around the hill. But my understanding is that they have analyzed that pipe section and determined that they've determined that they need to repair it. They need to fix it. And
okay.
I guess that's one of my questions. How will you analyze your pipeline to determine whether it needs to be replaced or it can be kept?
We're going to replace it. The one that's
suspended,
yeah. It's just without a doubt.
Okay, how did you determine that?
First of all, it's empty, so we have a lot more freedom to choose how to repair it, and just based on the terrain, we didn't want to put anything back that would slide again, you know, next spring or years from now. So, you know, we decided right away we would cut that piece out and build a replacement section, probably just lower than the current one. So, and then treat it as a repair. So,
And another question I had was, You know, have you made a survey of your entire line now after this weather?
The as-built, we have not. No.
Not a survey, but I mean, have you gone out and done a field survey? I mean, just have gone and traveled your route to see if there are any other locations.
I think I know our landmen are on the ground now, identifying places that, like you saw in the pictures, primarily to work with landowners. Mm-hmm. With issues they have. So we've got, I don't know, three or four landmen working now all up and down, you know, getting a look at the right-of-way. I know our field people have been
up and down
up and down. And I mean, you know, with the large amount of rain, all pipeline operators, including ourselves and everybody else, keeps an eye on their whole system. We have washouts on pipes that have been in the ground for 40 years, and that's part of our normal business is to examine the right-of-way. And now that things are starting to dry out, that's more feasible. There was a time period in May when it really wasn't feasible to get to some of the areas. So.
And it seems like there's a greater potential because of all the rain that we've been having to, you know, to have the washouts and other damage. So if you go and you follow your route, take a look, you're analyzing what you need to do with the landowners, are you going to be making a report, and would that report be available to the commission?
I certainly think it will be. It'll be part of our weekly report this summer, and we can report it at a higher level too, if that's.
What kind of report do you think that would be? What would you include in the report?
Like typically right now, the landmen work from a spreadsheet of landowner, a database of landowners. And as they are working right now with landowners, we get calls from landowners, we find places ourselves, and then we're basically the contractor comes back in to do the reclamation and the finishing. And I know the landmen keep spreadsheets that track that so that each landowner is, you know, contacted and it's repaired and either seeded or farmed as he wishes.
Do they take pictures when they're out?
Frequently, I think they do. I don't know how often they take pictures, but
I guess now would you the landslide that you had here? Would you consider that significant?
Absolutely.
Are there at what point? I mean, what I'm getting is, I'd like to have a report of all the areas where you have erosion problems, so that we can not only will you be following up on them, but then when we do post-construction inspection, we like to know where those problem areas were.
Yeah. Right. You're being very diplomatic, but I'll be more blunt.
Okay.
And when you look at the construction reports, 10% done. Cleanup and right-of-way restoration is being completed as weather conditions and right-of-way access are allowed. That's the comment. That's the 6-7 2011 report. 6-2, no comments, 0% cleanup done. As part of the certification process, Bridger is committed to keeping the commission informed of its intent on construction, and once construction has started, is going to keep the quote, we'll keep the commission updated on construction activities on a weekly basis. If we've got significant things happening out there, and this gets, I think, to Commissioner Kolk's comments as well, but they're not ever being relayed to the commission, we have a serious problem. What commitments can we get to ensure that we are getting information that's relevant to the line that hasn't been happening up to this point?
I just have to say I think that's an oversight on our part, I can certainly commit that we will, obviously the percentage done and stuff like that is good for a high level, but we'll probably put a little more focus on the comment, on the comments, if that's what you're looking for, some more subjective information.
I don't know if subjective is the right word, but something that would indicate when there are as Pat indicated, significant issues that aren't, yeah. I mean, to this point, haven't been related to the
We have, since the previous incident, added language to our ordering clauses requiring, more specifically stating that significant incidences must be reported, and we'll continue to do that. It shouldn't be necessary because I think that which you certify to beyond what's in the evidence, but we, it's an attachment, should imply all of those things. So
the other certification requirement that I have a concern about, and I'd be interested in, staff may follow up on this as well, but under number 11, it indicates Bridger commits to understanding and agreeing that construction must be suspended when weather conditions are such that construction activities will cause irreparable damage unless adequate protection measures approved by the commission are taken. I guess it gets into a discussion and debate about what irreparable damage means and when construction needs to be suspended. I think when we're talking about potentially an adjacent line in DGC's line needing to be moved 1,400 feet some other way, or having 50 feet on either side of it cut open, I mean, you're getting into the realm of irreparable damage to something, at least to the DGC line. Environmentally, it might be a separate issue, but I don't know, Pat, if you've had an opportunity to think about that. Or
I think, too, that when we built the area where the slide is, and Tad, I'm guesstimating this was early March,
okay,
late February, we built through there. And at the time, I think nobody would have said we're going to do irreparable damage, and harm might come. It would have been at that point fairly routine winter construction. And then through the spring, then we don't have access to it because of the rain and mud. So there's a time disconnect between when the construction of the installation of the pipeline was done and the significant rains that came after that. So
the and we may have to schedule our own powwow on this thing when we're done here, but your comments, what you just said there, goes back to the questions I had during the hearing about spill response and cleanups and those kind of things. I remember the vivid question of, okay, if something goes wrong, can you guys get out there all the time to do the cleanup you need to do? And the answer was yes, we'll always be able to get out there. And so then you're telling me now, you couldn't get out there now because of the... So, I mean, I understand there are spill response measures in place, but this is of an area that you're telling me you couldn't get at because of the severe winter. This is a severe winter, but there's no end in sight to the severe winters.
Let me address that real quick. We had staff when we were notified by DGC. Now, keep in mind, we don't start our aerial patrols until the line until the line's full of crude oil. And so when we were informed by the DGC staff, I think we had people and equipment out there within. I mean, it was a matter of
the afternoon of the conference call. We had a track hoe on site. We didn't go in to do any work. Based on DGC's request that we not work below the pressurized CO2 line.
Right.
We had quite a...
And at that time, we did specifically ask DGC to depressure that line because, in our view, that created a dangerous situation. And they said no. I don't want to speak for them, but the response was generally no, it does not. It's not a dangerous situation. We're analyzing it right now. And so we kept our equipment back. So I don't know if you want to.
In that respect, we did respond. We had equipment out there.
I mean, it was within hours and not days or weeks. So we did have equipment out there, ready to. Our first line of action would have been to get the actual any of the hillside that was continuing to press against the pipeline away, and that's what we wanted to get that the equipment down there to do, except with DGC's line in the way and their refusal to depressure it, we stayed back.
I I think to further take this to more detail, that, you know, there's a difference between responding to an emergency, whether it's a spill or a slide, and conducting construction activity in an area that's inaccessible and muddy. We're under a lot of pressure from landowners to stay off of the ground while it's muddy, because you end up doing more harm than good. So, you know, we've got kind of conflicting.
Sure, and I get that. I just want to make sure we walk this through, because I get the difference in once there's product in the line. But also, if I remember right from the hearing, too, there's all the cultural artifacts and all these little bluffs that were within very close to the pipeline. I mean, as these things slide down, there could be, who knows, there could be a ship of artifact that has just slid through one of these areas. And that's a whole other kettle of fish that, that hasn't even been broached here yet today. Do you know of something that has happened out there?
No, I don't. That's you know, something, you know, when we're in an emergency situation, you know, we respond and we, you know.
You should consult with all these people, though, too, because they all have a dog in the fight and they're all going to come back sooner or later.
Well, if you see a T-Rex sticking out the side all of a sudden, you better do something, right? I appreciate that you stand up for your contractor, but I don't have very much confidence. I've got to be honest. This is pretty ugly looking stuff.
I will say this, is that I think what you have in front of you, though, is one side of the story. I'm not sure which event you're talking about, whether it's the
other side of the story. I mean, it's
the.
Well, and I don't know that I don't know which spread, which contractor was working when the DGC lines were struck, or when the WBI line was struck. But a pattern of sort of what appears to me to be at the very least sloppiness is problematic, Tad. I mean, in all honesty, I just
we need to build them safely, and this doesn't help us.
But we got to maintain public confidence, or we're all in trouble.
I understand that, and I understand that. I understand what you're saying, but you know, with regards to the line strike before, there's definitely some question about whether or not there were some the procedures in place by the state of North Dakota for the one call were properly followed, and.
But whose responsibility is it ultimately to use one call? It's the contractor's responsibility. So ultimately it goes back to the contractor.
Right, but if the line's not properly marked.
It's the operator's responsibility to mark it accurately.
Yeah.
So
that's another issue, but it's.
Well, I think it goes to the heart of the issue, is that if we don't know where the pipeline is and we have made our one calls, then, you know.
Yep.
I don't want to go into that, because I think will be a very contentious component.
Okay, so what do we do? I mean, that's the biggest. This is awareness is good, but then you wonder, do we have a separate decision that we need to make, or is there?
Well, here's, I mean, if you want to discuss it, I mean, Basin Electric is filed a report, because they need to move a line, and so they're treating this as an incident on their line, not a complaint against Bridger, although you know, then it's up to I guess staff or us to decide whether if we believe there's been a violation of the order, to file our own complaint if we feel like that one is warranted. That's, you know, if you just sort of play out scenarios, but anyway, that would require another discussion, I would think. Pat, am I missing something, or is what?
That's how I would see it going, too. I mean, you wouldn't be making any decisions today. The company might offer to the commission what they would like to provide, or what they might do, or how they might provide assurances. Before we go into the next meeting, which might be a work session on what the commission might want to do. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we're all ears today.
Yeah.
What I would ask is a couple things. I think, number one, on the weekly updates, I think it's clear that you guys need more detail. And number two is that if you guys do decide that you want to have a I'm not sure if your work sessions are closed or
everything's open, and that's probably a good.
But
you just kind of talk about different proceedings that the commission can do. But a work session is really just an opportunity for the commission and staff to speak amongst itself regarding any case that we have. And everything that the commission does is open to the public, so I mean, people can sit in. But primarily, it's commission and staff just talking amongst itself. But not formally making any decisions. We may give direction to staff on which way we're leaning. Informal hearings are like this, where we take information onto the record and we can make decisions based on information that we gather here, but only if they're not contested-type proceedings. It's really just kind of an information gathering. Then beyond those two types of meetings, and we have formal hearings, which you know are formally noticed everything, and that's where we can formally gather potentially contested information on the record. Commission meetings are where we'd vote orders out, things like that. So I think what Pat's suggesting is our next step would just be to schedule a work session amongst ourselves and talk about where we're at, what we're thinking, what we know at this point. The DGC issue of rerouting their line is in a sense a separate case. It's impacted by the events, but it's ultimately decided on its own merits. If they're going to be proposing to change the direction of their pipeline, which is a separate sited line,
mm-hmm. And there could be a follow on too. We've talked about this. About do we need some type of rules or procedures about how close pipelines can be to each other? And it goes back to your question of maybe you don't know where some of the stuff in the ground is at. Because that ultimately was, I think we did talk about this during this hearing about how close these lines were.
Oh, yeah. It was especially yeah. As it came across got to the river. Little Missouri and yeah. All that, yeah.
Right, because at that time, I mean, it's no secret. When we were crossing that the river, there was only a couple places where you could go up or down.
Yep,
and
right.
Yep. And so we did try to work closely with them and, One thing I would also like to offer is that if we need to come back up here and be more prepared than 2 days of preparation,
fair. And we know, and that's why we're not jump. I don't think we're going to jump to any real quick conclusions. I appreciated your willingness to come on such short notice, and you know. So we understand. I know what you're getting at, and we mm-hmm. understand that. We want to be fair to you about that. At the same time, you know, there's some imminent challenge here because of potential damage to the DGC line. Although they're more than capable of taking care of all of that. I had another thought, but anyway. So I think in all likelihood, after we have our work session, we'll have a better idea of what we want from you. But I would also say that in the meantime, be thinking about what to offer up. In other words, if you want to be proactive and you know, in addition, if you think of some things that would be helpful, you know, feel free to offer those to Pat and get them in front of us so that as we discuss.
Okay.
We can sort of move. One of the things, Pat, have we refunded have we gone through, I forget our rules as it relates to refunding of the filing fee? Yes.
No, that's still under construction. So
we don't. So we still have all of it.
I believe we do. I think we still have all of it.
The balance of what hasn't been spent. Okay. Because that's another thing. I mean, maybe we want to engage the services of a third party and get somebody out there on the ground.
Mm-hmm. It's an option. It's been done before. We have questions about pipeline construction activities.
I mean, to kind of echo what Kevin is saying about the importance of coming up here, I'd much rather prefer you come up just like you did now and tell us what you know, and then we work forward then to try to get the fill in the blanks because the questions come. And, you know, I think the testimony during the hearing, you talked about how many trucks a day you're coming off the road. So I'm still a big fan of pipelines. I mean, the risk that we're dealing mm-hmm. with here is way less than the risk of, what is it, 200 trucks a day or something you testified to?
300, right. I think.
It was huge. So
right, and especially considering Highway 22
right.
that's...
Right.
So, one, you understand that, yeah, our thoughts are, but it still will be hard to cite pipelines if the public loses trust in the process.
Understand.
Okay.
I think in the meantime, then, we need to get back to you with some more detailed information about some of the incidents that have happened, and then, you know, in preparation for your work session, and then maybe we can follow that up with another meeting like this to walk through it if you need to.
When you say incidents, you're talking primarily about the construction-related activities in this spread near Little Missouri, or you're talking about everything else?
Well, I was actually more talking about, like, as far as this one goes, I mean, this, you know, our, you know, what we can provide really is just more pictures. You know, we are trying to engage a soils engineer to take a look at that. But really, when it comes down to it, it's pretty clear in our mind that we just have to, you know, replace the whole section of pipeline. But regards to the line strikes earlier this year, I think I could provide some more information about that as well.
Well, and
I don't know.
I don't know. I'm trying to think if we want to keep these two separate.
I would keep
issues.
Them separate.
So okay.
I think we may want to.
We got info coming at us the other way from that stuff.
Yeah, I mean that. Yeah, that to me is a
separate issue.
It's a separate deal. Okay. And belongs in its own case if something goes forward with that. This to me is really the siting, construction, reclamation. Construction problem issue related to this Little Missouri crossing, and especially in relation to the DGC line. So I would focus more in on that.
Okay.
Kevin,
I agree. No.
Yeah, no, I like Pat's point, though, of if you tell us where the concerns are, then during our post-construction, our folks can make sure they're looking at those areas a little closer, because ultimately that's get this thing built the right way and get it all mitigated and everything done.
And that's what I was thinking, too. I'd like to see, something on all the areas where you have problems, issues, where you have erosion problems, that is going to need significant reclamation.
Okay.
Don't forget about the tree planting. Right.
Later.
We had one hearing where there was no trees found. That
was a gas plant.
Yeah.
160.
They agreed to plant 10.
Ours too. Crazy.
Okay. With that, is there anything else for the good of the order?
I don't think so.
Okay. Hearing none, we will close the informal. That is the only item on the agenda. Thank you.
All right.
Did you come up this morning?
Out of mud.